Welcome to this talk from the Canando Zen Meditation Center. Located in Mountain View, California, Canando's meditation practice is open to the public. For more information or to get in touch with us, you can visit our website at canando.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.
Good evening. When I was still a young boy, I knew that I wanted to become an engineer, like many young boys at that time. And my family thought that was a good idea, so no problem. I liked science, and I liked math, and I thought, I was fascinated by them, and I thought these are really nice ways to look at problems and to solve problems and to make things. And so I went to college and in engineering, and the very first class that we took, I'll never forget, the first day of the first class was calculus. And sometime during the semester in calculus, I learned about optimization, how the techniques of calculus can help you optimize something. Where you bring two factors together so that they are in balance, and you're at the point where don't change it. This is the best. This is the best you can do. It's optimum, you know, the best. And it's like this is a perfect trade-off. You know, competing factors in a very complex relationship, you can find the optimum. And I thought, this is fantastic. And I kind of fell in love with the whole concept of optimizing. And I liked how I felt it could eliminate uncertainty, find balance, help you solve problems very cleanly. You can help you wrap up a problem very neatly and cleanly, and so that you never have to hear from it again. Very elegant, I thought. This whole idea of optimizing, wow. I became a little bit obsessed with it. I tried to optimize everything I did, you know. So I thought it was the solution to everything. So I spent many years, you know, looking at things that way. Find the optimization. And it took me many years to realize that that approach, that concept may work in a laboratory, it may work on paper, and it may work for individual situations in life. But you cannot optimize real life. Cannot optimize life. And I came to the realization that my search for the perfect solution was very foolish. But it took me a while to discover that. Because continually searching for the perfect solution to everything and to my life made me, you know, obsessed about the details of very ordinary situations. And I was always hunting for loose ends to tie them up, keep things optimized. And it was frustrating until I realized that optimization does not like messiness. It's the opposite. Optimization does not like messiness. But real life is messy. That is its inherent nature. Our lives are messy. Messy things. So hunting for optimization is going down the wrong path, going down the wrong taking the wrong direction. It took me a long time to understand it. So real life is messy. There's some things you can't control to optimize. Primarily that includes people. Real life includes us people. And we are creatures who are very restless and full of imagination. And it's really hard for us to sit still. We are very complex creatures. And we create complicated situations. And we create changing situations where there are no right answers. Just change. Things happening. And if you look for the ultimate optimized right answer at any particular moment, it will escape you. It took me a long time to finally understand you cannot optimize life with some analytical technique. And I also learned something else. I learned that messiness is okay. I used to think it wasn't. At one time I thought it wasn't. We don't want messiness. We want optimization. It took me a while to learn that messiness is okay. And sometimes, and very often, in fact, it is necessary and very wise to allow the details of a situation to become messy. And if we can allow details of various situations in life to be messy and not try to overmanage them, we can optimize a big picture, the big picture, by letting small pictures just be messy. So we should put our emphasis on our overall relation with someone or something and not be too concerned with the messiness of this aspect or that aspect. Don't try to manage all the details. Let them be messy. It's okay. Put our emphasis on the overall relationship. And that's the secret of married life, isn't it? The secret of political relationships and all relationships. Don't worry too much if there's messiness here and there. We should keep our emphasis on the big picture. Part of the trouble with us human beings is that we seem to be insisting on having some analytical method, either mental or mechanical, to solve problems in the complex world. What's the solution to this or that? The trouble is cause and effect follow each other relentlessly. This is what the teaching tells us. Cause and effect continue. So that everything is always changing. And we have to allow it. We have to allow for the messiness that comes up in ordinary situations. Of course, optimization is necessary for some things in daily life. And so one simple example, through science, through chemistry, the chemist can figure out the optimum formula for manufacturing steel or cement. And you want it to be optimum because you want to build homes and bridges. and highways and workplaces, and you want them to be secure and stable. So optimization is important in some situations. But trying to optimize people is very risky. So think for a minute about, you know, trying to optimize children. Optimize children. Optimize children's behavior. Trying to make each of their activities, you know, perfect. Always in balance. So that there's no stress or strain. So that there's no wasted time. And we can get the most return for our unit of effort. But, you know, children like to daydream. They like to fool around. They're adventurous. They like to try things. They don't care too much if they get into trouble. They don't care if they're messy. They like to be messy. And if we insist too much that they don't be messy, we have a problem. But through their inefficient messiness, kids will optimize themselves. So let's, you know, imagine trying to optimize or micromanage the flow of a river. You know, you can't do it. The river has to find its own way. If we look at the flow of a river and say, you know, it would be, we can optimize the flow by changing this or that. This is kind of foolish. We have to let the river find its own way, and this is its beauty. This is why we delight. This is why we take delight in seeing the river. We love its twists and its turns. We love the places where it is roaring loud, and we love its quiet places. And the same is true for people. Each of us has to find our own way, and this includes the messy moments of our life, our mistakes and our failures, as well as our successes. And we also find our own way sometimes by doing nothing, simply allowing our life to flow through us. We need to find a way to do that and not say, I'm not using my energy in the optimum way. I'm just sitting here doing nothing. I have to go optimize myself. And I think some people struggle with that and go through life very anxious. And of course, in our practice, we learn that it's important to know how to not do anything special, but to simply let life flow through us and not worry about optimizing what we are doing. So, our daily life includes messy moments, messy situations, and we learn to go from these moments that are not optimum to our life being optimum, our whole life being optimum. And this may seem like a contradiction. How do you optimize your life if events of your daily life are messy and not optimized? But that's our practice. These moments that are, these events that are not optimized, these are opportunities for us. When we feel something maybe out of balance, a little bit messy, not optimum, it's a chance to say, to consider what's going on. A chance to see how things are flowing. How is this situation messy? And if some mistake has been made to upset something, upset a relationship, so it's messy and not optimum, we have a chance to reflect on the mistake, and we have a chance to see the cause of it. And more importantly, we have a chance to understand how these so-called failed actions affect the whole world. And we can become wiser by understanding our relationships. And in that way, we become incrementally closer to optimizing our entire life. So when messiness appears in our daily life, there's no need to try to make it go away. Actually, we should embrace it, become comfortable with it, take a step back and get the bigger picture, and see how it fits in our life. So many years ago, when I was still working, when I had a job, I was working with a consultant on some project, and I said something that created a misunderstanding. I used words that implied that she was clerical, only good for clerical, that she was limited in what she could do. I chose the wrong word. But actually, I needed her and I wanted her help in all areas of the project, not just in a narrow sense. I wanted her entire engagement. But in haste, I had used an inappropriate analogy and caused bad feelings. So I thought about what happened, thought about my mistake. I focused on what it was I said and what it was I meant to say. And I backtracked. I explained to her that I want all of her professionalism, not just a part of it. I want all of her professionalism. And I learned from that that by reflecting on the messiness that I had created, we had a stronger relationship. So what it really, that kind of experience tells us is that optimization can get away from us. And messiness can take its place. But in that messiness, there's a chance to learn something. So the best way to optimize our life and our world, in a very large sense, is not to manage the details too much, but instead encourage the spirit of what we're doing. Not so much the details. I don't mean to be casual about the details. We have to take care of them, but to always encourage the spirit of what we're doing. And this encouragement is the catalyst that can transform complexity and uncertainty and mistakes into creativity and discovery. So, in each new generation, the parents of each new generation understand more how to oversee lives and relationships and become good parents. And how to see the big picture of their children's lives and not worry too much about, not to get too anxious about the messiness of ordinary activities. So I think as the generations go by, we become less reliant on control and firmness. We become more flexible, not worry if things are not optimized. Kids do need limits, of course, and they do need a clear sense of values. But what they really need, what we understand more and more, kids need broad-based encouragement because they are creative and sensitive beings. If we try to manage kids and we try to manage each other at a detailed level of specifics, if that's the way we relate to each other, and just that way, we will develop criticism and mistrust. So when we encourage and accept the messiness that does appear in our lives, we will discover an open-ended trust and love. So part of our practice is to learn that we don't need to get excited when some bit of messiness occurs. Don't react anxiously, but step back and see, how's the big picture? How are things going in a very global sense? If it's okay, if it's creative, if it's encouraging, we can take care of the messiness in a quiet way, in a measured way. As long as we keep the big picture and the balance of our life in our view. Does anyone have a question?
Les, common sense today, Zen, the word Zen, is associated to very detail-oriented, very precise and clean, and they say Zen design or a Zen person, or meaning very precise in the details, optimized maybe. And for sure, maybe a calm mind is also a mind that keeps things in their right position. But it is not associated to messiness. So can you comment on this? How this perception is in comparison to what you said tonight about the messiness and accepting the messiness? Because I get the impression that the general perception of the Zen practice is that it likes very clean tidiness and no messiness.
I agree. That is the general perception that people have about the practice. Very clean, very elegant, beautiful, very inspiring. But that's... that's not where our practice really expresses itself. Our practice expresses itself in the messy places of our life. It's like the perception people have of Zen practice is like entering into a museum. Oh, beautiful things, very inspiring things, things that we admire. But then we have to go outside where we hear traffic and noise and people rushing around and pollution and all these things. That's where our practice finds its life. And this is the challenge, you know, to take our practice into messy places, the messy situations. Take the training that we've given to our bodies and minds by practicing in a place like this or in a very fancy monastery, to take that training and bring it to everyday life situations where there is no training. So this is our work, actually. If we are serious about our practice, this is our work, to learn how to take the practice out of the museum into the messy world. This is a big koan. I want to say there is no formula, but I think maybe there is. And it starts with, be nice. Oh, yes, Richard.
Your discussion about optimization reminded me of the book, Brave New World. It's kind of a dystopian, futuristic book, and they optimize the babies to be assigned to alphas and betas and deltas.
Oh.
They stunted them, their intellect, so some people would be like service workers and other people would be managers. So it's like a nightmarish society of people classified at birth. So I think what was, you know, if you take optimization to an extreme, you end up with all kinds of distortions like that. Instead of allowing people freedom and opportunity to discover their own gifts and their own purpose. That's what brought to my mind. Mm. Do you want to comment on that?
No, not too much, because I think that's a really good example. I hadn't thought about that. That's a good example where they try to optimize the society by taking away freedom from people, by saying, you can only do this, and you can only do that. And maybe then the society can run like a machine, but the people don't feel. They don't feel their lives. So you said the Brave New World is a dystopian.
Yeah.
Yeah. And people don't feel their lives. I think that's a good analogy. Brave New World. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you for the talk, Les.
Yes.
So this actually reminds me a lot of in my field of reinforcement learning, which is one of these subfields of artificial intelligence. There's a field called reinforcement learning, and inside of it, there's kind of this task called control. So control is like literally just like, how do you control, you know, a robot arm to go from one place to another place? Okay, very simple. And in control, there's kind of two styles of doing it. One is open loop control, and the other one is closed loop control. And in open loop control, it's basically just like, you know, you make one plan at the very start of it, and you just kind of like turn your brain off and just execute towards it. And it usually doesn't work too well because, you know, if something goes wrong in the middle, you can't just keep executing your old plan. So people tend to do what's called closed loop control, which is basically you just keep planning again and again and again and again. But like, so your discussion of optimization really reminded me of that, because like I found kind of in my normal way of doing things, you can take this kind of idea of closed loop control, this constant planning, really, really far. So like all you're doing is every single moment you're like, all right, what's the next optimal thing I can do? And like I've found that through practice, you can just kind of like chill out a bit, you know, and not plan so much, and kind of find like this nice balance or harmony between these two extremes. And I've just found like, I just want to share, like I found like that makes things significantly less stressful in my life, when you just kind of like, you know, you plan occasionally, but you don't take it too far, and just like keep planning every single moment and try to do, you know, the optimal thing. So I just wanted to share that.
Thank you.
This talk was brought to you by the Cannondoe Zen Meditation Center in Mountain View, California. For more information or to support this podcast, go to cannondoe.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.